So we're getting started right now?
Let's go.
So. All right. Hello, everybody.
You switch it up. You must ate some barbecue chicken
Excuse
today.
Excuse me. Welcome to Moo and Q Podcast.
Keep it up, bro. We might get some Chinese followers.
I know, right? Asian.
How many billions of followers? How many billions of Chinese there is in China?
Let's see. The amount of calculations in Hong Kong, which is 3.765 million, multiplied by the square root of a lot.
Need that. Continue talking like that, bro.
Konnichiwa to the Japanese followers. Annyeonghaseyo for the Korean followers.
Peace to everyone.
Zdravstvuyte for the Russian followers.
Dope.
Yeah, bro. I speak all those languages,
man.
You
speak all these languages.
Yeah,
man,
four languages.
See, been high in this
Mira, papi.
Mira, that's the only thing I know from
uno,
Spanish.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
That's all I know.
You say cuatro?
My grandmother only taught me uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco.
That's it? Only up to five?
Only up to five. Dang. And then she told us mira. All I hear in the house, mira.
Mira.
I thought that was my name at one point. Like, that must be my name in Spanish, Mira.
¿Cómo te llamas? Mira.
What's good, bro?
How,
so you ready?
How's your week?
It was good, man. A little hectic, but you know the kids back in school.
That's what I was about
you
to say, right?
I mean? They started in school. Yesterday was the first day.
Yeah.
So they back at it. You know what I mean? Get out the house. Get to see their friends. They haven't seen their friends in 2 years, most of them. So it's good. What about you, bro?
No, just work and grinding.
Grinding,
you know, every
grinding.
Day I'm hustling, you know.
Dope.
In a good way.
What's new with you, though?
Nothing much. I mean, just the same old, same old. But the only thing is I'm loving life more and more every day.
That's how it's supposed to be, bro.
The positivity.
You ain't loving life.
Yeah.
That's important, man, because it's a lot of negativity out there.
You
open your phone, majority of the news feed is negative.
Yeah.
Majority of the posts is negative. So it's difficult. It's a difficult balance, especially for... With the social media, how do you stay on the side of positivity?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? How? Tell me.
Oh, you're asking
me. Yeah, I'm asking, bro. How do you stay on the side of positivity?
It's the same thing. It's the same thing I tell my kids.
Yes.
When my kid starts complaining and, you know.
Yes.
How come I can't have this? How come I can't have that? You know, when they start doing that, I always tell
them. Yes.
Remember, there's always somebody out there who has it worse.
Facts. And that's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Super good reminder. Yeah.
And then I remember back in the days in the hood when I was getting in trouble and I got locked up for a little bit. So I was like, you know what?
I think you did 6 months in a county jail.
Yeah. LA County Jail.
Bro, LA County Jail. I did 2 days in that joint and it felt like I did 6 months, bro.
And you remember going in.
I remember going
butt
in.
Butt naked.
Butt naked
spraying you down.
Joint was torture. Humiliation and torture, man. That joint was crazy.
They did a human cavity search as well. Violated my sexuality. Like it was wrong.
That's crazy, bro. I don't think they did that to me, man.
No, I mean, I didn't mean it like that. I mean, like, when they searched me, it felt wrong, you know?
Facts. 6 months, though, what you do 6 months for, if you don't mind?
No.
You don't have to go into details.
Yeah, no.
But 6 months, in, so they automatically
I was wrongly accused, though.
So they automatically put you in the Asians, because the way it works in L.A. County, when you go in, they start questioning, are you from the Bloods? Are you a Crip? Are you Latino? Are you Hispanic? And they automatically start putting you, they start off by... gangs, and then they start off by race. It was crazy.
Yeah, some of the Korean gang, one of the Korean gangs that all my friends were in, which I can't, I'm not gonna say which one that was. They automatically knew that I was associated with that. So
they had to put you automatically with the Asian side.
Yep, they already singled me out on that part.
Yes,
but the thing that got me in it was right after high school. We know in LA high school you graduate like in June.
Yes,
my birthday's in August, and I just turned 18.
Okay.
So back then, you know, I was smoking weed and doing all that junk.
Astaghfirullah. Haram, kids.
Exactly.
Weed is haram. Liquor is haram. Yeah. Everything haram.
Everything he just said is not haram.
But the beauty, we'll get back to your story. Of course, weed is haram and liquor is haram.
Yeah, of course.
But most people think that the religion of Islam is so strict. But in reality, we have a saying that everything is halal unless Allah says impermissible.
Yeah.
So majority of things is halal. The things that's haram is only for the benefit of our own self.
Yeah.
So continue. My bad, my brother.
No, it's all good though, because I don't do any of that now.
I never liked it before either.
It was all peer pressure, you know? I did
like
it only
because
my friends were doing it, all my boys were doing it.
Yes.
And you know, if I want to stay in that crowd, I had to do it too. So that's the reason why.
Yes.
But it was my birthday and we got into some of that and
yeah.
You know, my mind wasn't right.
Mm.
And then we went to this pool hall that we always used to cut class when we were in high school and go hustle money on.
Cool. Cutting class is also wrong.
Stay in school.
Stay in school. Don't be a fool.
Exactly. Don't be a fool. Stay in school. You see that? Look, we're rapping now. We're rapping, bro. No, so, and then from there, we were leaving at 4 in the morning. And, you know, at 4 in the morning, when you're hungry, where do you go? Denny's.
Denny's, bro. I had to think for a minute. Brought back memories, bro.
Yeah, so we were trying to go to Denny's. And then in the parking lot, I see this 16-year-old girl. Asian girl, right?
Yes.
I didn't know she was 16 at the time. Now I know, so I'm saying that. 16-year-old, her boyfriend was 17-year-old. And she was like leaning against the car.
Yes.
You know, on the in the driver's
boyfriend's
side.
Boyfriend's, girlfriend's, also not cool.
Yeah.
Stay in school, don't be a fool. And you got to keep it rhyming, bro.
And I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah, keep it going.
So as we're walking by, we hear them arguing, and he cheated on her and all that. And she's like, I can't believe you did that. And we're about to get in our car, which our car was parked about like 5 or 6 cars down.
Yes.
Then I heard this big bang, 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 bang noise. And I look back and I only could see above the cars.
Yes.
Because the cars are parked, like dress, right, dress.
Yes.
And all I see is the back of his head and this movement. So my boy is like, yo, get in the car. Let's roll. Let's roll. I'm hungry. You don't even know these cats. Let's roll.
So he was beating on a girl.
Yeah. So not only beating on her, when I went over there to see what's going on, all I see is she's laid out. Her head is next to the rims of the car.
Yes.
And he's kicking her head in like she's a football player.
Coward,
you know,
only cowards would hit on girls. Only cowards
so
beat
I
girls.
I pushed him just to get him to stop.
Yes,
and he trips over her and he falls, and I just snap.
Wow.
So I started, you know, paybacks up, and then I started going right back, doing the same thing on him.
Well, he kind of deserved that though, man. He beating up on a girl and kicking her while she's out. That's definitely
dude.
A coward.
That was blood. Like
you shouldn't even went to jail. The police should have said, "Man, you just helped us, man. How can we pay for your next Denny's meal?"
Here, exactly, you know right? I mean? That's what I was saying.
Like some stuff. Come on, police officers. Some stuff should be common sense. Like if he, you know what I mean. You helping a young girl that's getting beat up by a coward. They should have let you go, bro.
But
should have drove you. They should have drove you home.
Here's a catch 22 on that.
Yes.
When it came time, it was like 2 months, and I had to show up for court.
Yes.
Right, and I was getting tried for 2 counts of attempted manslaughter.
Yes.
And assaulting a minor because I just became 18.
Okay. Yeah.
So, me and my boy, we say our testimony on the stands. Of course, they say their lawyer was like, oh, their blood alcohol level was this much. They had THC in their system.
Yeah,
you know we can't use our testimony as evidence.
Yes.
And so she goes on the stand, and when I saw her, is like I could recognize her. Like her face, she was once a beautiful woman.
Wow, he beat her that bad.
Like she
only cowards do this though.
Yeah,
you
her
know
face
what I mean?
Was stitched up all over the place. Like she was like,
wow,
like this because she couldn't talk because her jaw was shattered.
Yeah.
You know she's still recovering.
Yes.
And so we're sitting there, and my boy's like, you're good, man.
Yeah.
You're good now. She's gonna be our ticket out. And I see her, and I could see her looking at her boyfriend like all scared. And I'm like, oh, she's going to roll on me.
Wow.
And that's exactly what she did. I was beating her, and her boyfriend was trying to protect her, and then I just flipped
She switched it on you.
To protect her boyfriend. So I get thrown in.
That's right? Crazy.
6 months.
Crazy.
And you got to understand, when I was 18, I looked like I was 12.
Yeah, 6 months in the county jail. You know? Bro, that ain't no joke.
And I
LA
look like
county jail.
And I look like I'm 12.
Wow.
So I got sentenced for 2 to 3 years.
Crazy.
So while I was in there every day, like it was like clockwork. At 7 o'clock when the cell door opened up, two dudes came in and beat the crap out of me.
Wow. From the same like other Asians?
Yeah.
They just bullied you.
No, it wasn't that. Apparently, it was ordered by an associate of mine because they wanted to toughen me up.
Yeah, that's I guess that's the Asian way.
That's the best way.
Way to say we got to toughen. It might have been your father who sent that note. Your pops probably sent that kite. Make sure you beat my son up every day until he come out of the cellar, man.
Yeah, so when I get out,
That's crazy though, bro.
So,
you know, that's why sometimes they say mind your business, but it's difficult to mind your business when you see
injustice.
Evil like that, like injustice, unjust, you know what I mean? But then it flipped on you.
Yeah.
But you did the right thing,
but
bro.
In 6 months?
You know what I mean?
So this is the funny part. In 6 months, like I'm, I wake up and the door opens when it's not supposed to. So I'm thinking, oh shoot, is it time for my butt kicking? You know? And
don't tell me they brought you Chinese food.
The two guards come in and they say, grab your,
you gotta
go see the warden. And I'm like, what the heck did I do? So when I go over there, he's like, we're processing you out now, and you're free to go.
Why?
And I was like, has it been 2-3 years already? Like, that's how messed up I was. I was like, is it 2 years already?
You lose all time. Like, you don't understand the timing. You don't know if it's daytime.
Yeah, and I was scared because, you know, I'm 18 years old, but I look like I'm 12.
Wow.
You know, so I was like.
So why did they release you early?
So that girl stayed with her boyfriend.
Mm.
And they lived in, like, the second story of apartments.
Yes.
You know, in Hawaiian Gardens.
Okay.
Right, and then when that incident happened, it was in Norwalk.
No, not Pacoima. That's what is Hawaii Gardens? East LA?
No. That's like in LA County. Like, you know, there's LA Norwalk, County. Cerritos.
Yes.
And
then
Hawaiian Gardens.
Okay.
Yeah, and where I got arrested was in Norwalk.
Okay.
It was in front of
but still LA Burgers. County though.
Yeah, yeah. They're all still LA County.
Yes.
That's where all the Asians lived.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I guess her and her boyfriend got in an argument, and then the way her apartment was. Her living room, the window is tall windows.
Yes.
So it was only like that much from the floor to the start of the window.
Okay.
So the window basically came up to like the middle of her calf.
Yeah.
And so they're fighting, and I guess she did something, and then he pushed her.
Wow.
From what her mom tells me. This is what her mom told me. And she fell out the window because it was screamed. Two stories down.
Okay?
She was in a full body cast. Her mom's like, that's it. We're done.
That's it. Like,
we're taking
he's
it to the cops. They pressed charges on him, and then she. This is what I found out. Her mom knew the truth from the get-go, but she couldn't come clean because her daughter already lied on the stand.
Yeah, she could get
thrown in jail.
Yeah,
so I get it. You know, mother protecting her child. You know,
facts.
But then this time she was like, "Enough's enough."
Enough
like,
is enough, man.
While they're pressing charges, she said, "You need to tell the truth about what happened with that young boy that's in jail now."
Wow.
So they did. That's,
well, at least she came clean eventually, man.
They took it to the city courts, and then they got me out.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Dope, and then from there,
but
the story
the county
goes on.
Jail is crazy in LA, man. It's like I said, I only did 2 days in that joint.
Yeah.
And it felt like 2 months.
Right?
But you know, these are the things when you're young, you know what I mean? We make a lot of terrible decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we don't really understand the ramification of these things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you mess up and. It can haunt you for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? The good thing about me, bro, one of the things that saved me from actually doing jail time, of course, I've been getting arrested since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also like you. When I was 12 years old or 13 years old, I was looking like I was 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah.
But I was outside on my block, Chancellor Avenue, with drug dealers, murderers, and killers at 9 years old, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time that I tried to hustle and sell drugs, I got arrested, 12 years old. Police came. I'm so tiny or whatever. They called my grandmother. They was like, you know, my grandmother came, smacked me in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And the police officers let me go. You know what I mean? But from that day, I decided that I'm going to do something different. I said, man, I tried a few times to sell drugs and it wasn't for me. You know what I mean? Thank God.
Yeah.
My brothers and them, on the other hand, they became the top figures in my community, my brothers and my cousins.
That's so Mooney and Siki?
My brother Mooney. My brother was the top, back then, this is a story, he changed his life, but he was the biggest,
mm-hmm.
biggest drug dealer in my neighborhood. Even though he did his time, he did time in jail he paid his dues back to society for that. He don't agree with that life anymore, but at one particular time, he was the man. You know what I mean? So when I came up in New Jersey, you got to understand, bro, it was my family, my brothers, my cousin, we ran our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that we was the toughest, but we ran with the toughest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know how that
and,
is. Yeah.
And we just, so be, I was a hood celebrity before I became a rap artist. No joke. I was a hood celebrity in elementary school, high school. Before I got into the Outlaws, I was already known in my neighborhood. You know, so what saved me, I believe, is that when I was 13 years old and eventually I got into the music industry, that was a way out from the streets.
Yeah.
Because when I started doing music and I got in the music industry, my brothers and my cousins, and suddenly they was going in and out of jail, in and out of jail. But I'm already on the West Coast now. My focus is studio, you know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of times people make these mistakes as youngsters because when we think back, we kids, you know what I mean? We don't really know. We think we having fun half of the time. And then you realize that it follows you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we always, like, my oldest is 22 years old. Thank God he's a good kid. He didn't really, never got in trouble, really, never really. I'm talking about as far as the streets, never been involved in these type of things. A good kid, man. And also my kids here, we raise them differently. The name of the goal is to raise your kids differently than the way you was raised.
Yeah.
That's the goal. You know what I mean?
Yep. For absolutely, sure. Absolutely, absolutely. Dang.
Man.
Brought back memories.
Yeah, man, brought back memories, bro.
But like with me growing up, like it was hard because.
Yes.
I mean, when I grew up in Pico Rivera, all yes. Mexican neighborhood, okay, I wasn't treated that bad. When I had that 6 months where I lived in Compton, wasn't treated bad.
Okay.
Every once in a while, there'll be someone going, chink this, chink that, yeah. Ching chong, ching ching ching, you know, but whatever. It wasn't like harsh.
Yes.
Then I ended up moving to Downey, California. At the time, it was an all-white community.
Okay.
That was hard.
And which way?
Honestly, I would rather be in prison than live in an all-white community.
From what, bullying? And
yeah, especially back in the 80s and 90s.
Wow, yeah. 80s and 90s was crazy, bro.
Dude, the way the white people were towards all races during that time, it was hard.
Especially in Southern California. You got a lot of skinhead community, yeah. Like communities or pockets of these skinheads. I remember I remember one time, bro, and they had that tattoo. What is the tattoo when you know them? Is it the spider net or whatever?
Yeah. That's the Aryan.
The Aryan Brotherhood.
Yeah,
the
Aryan
Brotherhood. I kid you not. You know my son, Muhammad, had cancer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever told you.
Yeah.
Right before I moved to Saudi Arabia, he had cancer. So he was in the children's hospital downtown L.A. The children's hospital.
Yeah, I forget the name of that. I was in there once too.
Word?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And we'll get on that. We'll talk about why. So then I remember one day I needed a haircut. So I drove down and went to this other neighborhood. Bro, I walked in a barber. Kid you not. It was like a movie. As soon as I walked in, it was all skinheads.
Yeah.
They all looked at me. Everybody stopped talking. And literally, they didn't say nothing though. But I knew what was up because I started looking at, I sat down and they all looking at me and I'm looking at their tattoos and I'm looking at the other barber and I'm looking at the people waiting.
Yeah.
I know what time it is.
Yeah.
So I was like, in my head, Masalama. I got up out of that joint. Like, these jokers ain't even going to cut my head. I know I don't belong here.
Dude, the same situation happened to me in Alabama.
Alabama.
Yeah, so when I joined the military.
What the hell you doing in Alabama?
When I joined the military, you know, we have to go to training to learn our trade.
Yes. Okay,
you know?
Yes.
So our schoolhouse was in Alabama.
Wow.
Fort Rucker, Alabama.
You probably was the only Asian back then that Alabamians
ever saw. In my class, there was like a class of seven people, including myself, right?
Yes.
There was four black dudes.
Yes.
Me and two white dudes.
Okay.
So me and the black folks, we're like, we don't get along with the white folks, right?
It's crazy.
So
we
got when you become phase five, you're allowed to actually go outpost. You get back to your regular clothes.
Okay.
And you can actually go enjoy the civilian life.
So I remember
the weekend we all got phase five, and me and the black dudes were like, hey yo, let's go out. And I was like, all right, bet, let's go. And you gotta understand, ever since I joined the military and basic training out up until now, they thought, since I was Asian, I knew martial arts automatically. So they would always like joke like that, right?
Yeah.
But here's the funny part. So we end up going, we got in this taxi and we're like, hey, take us to any bar or whatever, you know?
Yes.
So it takes us to like this, you know, boondocks, in the middle of the boondocks, like bar.
Crazy.
We walk in and it was just like,
bars,
what happened
is not
with
good,
you.
Kid. No. Stay out of them.
Haram.
Well, go ahead.
But it was just like what happened with you. We walked in and imagine it's four black dudes and me.
Wow.
We walked in and everybody, it was noisy and it just became like dead silent.
Okay.
And all of these, some of them look like bikers. Some of them look like
Alabama,
like construction workers.
Alabama, I think they still stuck in 1886.
Yeah.
Like our spouse, 1886. Yeah, exactly. They stuck.
But everybody stopped and then looked at us and they all got up and like walked out as we're walking to the bar. Mm. So you got to understand that bar was empty.
Wow.
There was one bartender, female us.
Yeah.
And we're like, can we order? And I'm all looking around. And she's like, fellas, I think you guys need to roll.
She kept it real. They probably was like, going to get the strap.
Yeah, and she's like, don't leave now because you're gonna get killed. So she went on the phone and she was calling me. Like, I think she was calling the police or whatever.
Yeah, she already knew what time it was. So, bro, I was in Alabama, the boondocks.
The bar is the kind
That's why you got to stay out of bars. Yeah. See, kids, whenever you go to these places,
stay in the hotel.
The Shaitan is waiting for you.
Just stay in the hotel.
You going to the Shaitan neighborhood, bro. You talking about the bar and all this stuff. So ain't nothing good going to come out of this.
So the bar entrance is the door with the little,
you
know, the little window like that, right? So we look outside and they're all standing out. There were crowbars. Wow. You remember the clubs?
Yeah. Where they were stuck in 1886, bro.
Yeah, bats and all that. And like 4x4s.
How y'all escape? Y'all in the army? Now y'all better act like the army.
Yeah, so check this out. So they're like, oh crap, how are we going to get out of this? And like, all right, look. There are not that many of them. There's like 15 people, right?
Yes, 15
dudes outside.
Yes.
So each of the black dudes are like, okay, I could take like probably two or three down. And then they get to me. It's like, all right, Quan, because my last name is Quan, and in the military they named you the last name. They're like, Quan, he knows martial arts. He could probably take six of them. So we good. And they got
automatically
it. So
thought you knew martial
they
arts.
They mentally messed me up so much that I actually thought I knew martial arts, like Jet Li. So I'm like, yeah, I got him.
Yeah.
Luckily, the MPs and the police came, broke it up, and they escorted us back on post.
Bro, y'all see?
Now check this out. Here's the funny part. I'm laying in my bed that night, and I'm like sitting going, dang, we almost got into it. And I thought to myself, and I was like, hold up, I don't know any martial arts. I was like, damn, I would have got murdered. Dang.
That's crazy, bro. Yeah. You know, the sad part that, you know, unfortunately in America, man, you still got places that segregated.
Yeah.
It's sad, you know what I mean? Because, and people still judging people from race, the color. It's crazy. Like, of course, America came a long way. We can't front, you know what I mean? But you still have pockets of places where, even if you white, you might not can't enter this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Or if you black, you cannot enter this neighborhood.
Yeah.
You still have this ignorance. To me, it's full blown ignorance, man. That unfortunately,
I don't think it's ever gonna go away.
I don't know. It's crazy. You know what I mean?
It might get close.
It might get close. You got some of the people.
Still gonna be somebody.
You still got some of the newer generation. It seems like they changing.
Yeah.
It ain't like what our grandmothers and them were saying. You know what I mean? Believe it or not, what 50, 60 years ago in America, there was water fountains that say colored only, white only.
Yeah,
crazy, bro.
So
we did come a lot. We did come some good, you know, we made a few miles away from that. You gotta be honest.
And on top of that, you know, like, you could vouch for this.
Was you ever racist? Be honest.
Me?
Yes. Keep it real. Yeah. Keep it a buck.
No. You see,
was racist against
I was prejudiced.
Okay, prejudice.
Because there's a difference between races that people don't know. Yes, racism means
you
hate the whole race.
Yes, prejudice, you might have a little prejudices towards certain things of that race. Okay, spill
and then
it, bro.
Because of what I went through as a kid,
yes,
I was prejudiced against white folks.
Because they bullied you pretty much.
Yeah, and they thought that they owned the country and, you know.
Yes.
And one thing I used to hate growing up was when they say, oh, why don't you go back to China? I'm like, dog,
go back to Europe.
I'm Korean. And I was born in Denver, Colorado. You know,
real talk. It's not like ignorance everywhere. Yeah. You know, I thank God that the way I was raised, I didn't have no prejudice or no racism in me.
Yeah.
And then my grandmother did an amazing job with that. You know what I mean? She did an amazing job where she taught us at an early age. I judge an individual the way they deal with me. No matter if you black, you white, Asian, you show me respect, I show you respect.
Yeah.
You disrespect me, may Allah help me and make me a better, I might disrespect you back.
Exactly.
I still got a long way to go.
Yeah.
I might try to avoid it for a little bit, but eventually.
But once you keep on pushing that button.
Yeah, I treat people the way they treat me. You know, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's better to let stuff slide. But I can't admit, bro, that I came a long way where I let a lot of stuff slide.
Yeah.
Before, I used to be on my P's and Q's waiting for somebody. Like, I came from that era where I used to wake up looking for trouble.
Yeah.
You know, now I wake up, I want to start the farthest away from trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I want to be away from anything negative. You know what I mean? But it was a time of my life that I used to wake up. No joke, bro. There was a time in my life where I used to go, the outlaws stopped going outside with me to like events.
True story. I remember you telling me this.
Because they used to say, even Noble, as he mentioned, when he gave a little quote in my book when Suleiman was interviewing him, he said, man, I used to think Mu had a death wish. And I really did.
Yeah.
Like, I used to literally go outside and say, today, I felt good starting fights. For some reason, we'd go to an event. It's me and the homies, the outlaws. We'd see 20, 30 dudes. And somehow it would kick off.
Something.
And then it got to the point where I'd be like, y'all want to go out? And I noticed the numbers was dwindling. Less and less of my friends
started getting
lower, and they kept saying, they said, bro, we tired of fighting.
But it was also because of the alcohol.
It was the alcohol.
It was bad with alcohol.
You know what I mean? I was bad with the alcohol.
Yeah.
And I was just, I had so much anger that I didn't know how to address it. You know, mental health and depression is real in the black community, but now it changed. Now you have black people, they might go to therapy. But when I was growing up, depression, we didn't have no such thing as depression. They looked at that as the white man disease. So you
same with ADHD.
Yeah, same with these things. So I couldn't go to my family and be like, you know, I feel sad today. They would say, man, get your butt up and shut up and go outside and ride your bike. Boy, you'll feel better after, something like that.
Yeah.
So I grew up with a lot of anger in me. So then I got to a point in my life that the only way I dealt with my anger is hurting someone. Unfortunately, like that's how I feel good. And it was just fun. Like I had so many incidents. I sometimes think back like, man, God saved me so many times without me even realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can look back and be thankful. Like, man, if these dudes could have blown my head off, and they literally just gave me a pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And alcohol definitely played that part. You know what I mean? I think the best time of my life is when I stopped drinking alcohol. Because I became Muslim, of course, and it was impermissible, and it was the most difficult thing for me to change. And the reason why I share this story, because I get messages sometimes where people say, how did you stop doing drugs? How did you? I never really been into drugs, but I was a drinker. And I just remember, man, it was difficult, but every day I would pray, you know, to get off of this alcohol. I was so bad that I really should have went to a rehab. Even my brother Mooney used to come to me. My brother Mooney used to say, bro, I think you should go to a rehab. Like, he used to say it all the time. But because I was so prideful, you know, we grew up believing only people who are losers go to rehab.
Or who are weak.
Yep. But actually, to me, in my opinion, if you're going to get help, you actually strong. You're whether it's the rehab, you actually a strong individual. Yep. You know what I mean? So I was weak trying to make excuses. But eventually, I was able to stop drinking. I was able to see things clearer. You know what I mean? I was able to notice that a lot of my problems was because of me drinking. You know what I mean? Yeah. Started from that, bro.
For all of you guys who do drugs and who can't stop drinking, you got to understand it's easy to do drugs or drink.
Yes.
To stop it and get off of it is the hardest. Hard so part. If you could do that, you're not weak. You're absolutely strong.
What benefit from these things? Nothing. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's hard to say now because I think in my teenage years, if somebody come to me and say the same thing, how are you going to benefit from these activity, I tell them, get the hell out of my face.
Yeah.
So that's why when I speak to the youngsters, I don't come at them from that angle, because nobody gonna really hear it from that angle.
Exactly. You know what I mean? To tell them take
it step by step.
The experiences we went through, and then be like, hey, learn from our mistakes.
Learn from our mistakes, man.
Come on, young blood. You know, learn from our mistakes.
I had so many days of getting drunk, and next thing I know, I'm somewhere, and a guy pointing a gun at me. Yeah. Like, I went through these stages where I was like, bro, it was a time of my life I was looking to get put out of my misery. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I thought that, of course, I wasn't suicidal where I would take my own life, but I was suicidal where I wanted somebody to take my life. I went through that stage. I remember one day, bro, crazy, where we was, what's my man name? Faith Evans' husband.
Who?
He's a producer.
Because Faith Evans used to be...
Not Biggie,
right?
The
new one?
Stevie J. So one day, this one, I was still on my ignorant bad boy killer stuff. Mm-hmm. So we was in the Death Row Outlaws studio, not Death Row, sorry. We was in a studio in Studio City. Myself, my cousin Reeve, Quim, and Edie, and a few other people, my little brother. And I went through a stage in my life, bro. If anytime I hear somebody from Bad Boys around, I'm on them. We got to fight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We got to fight. Like, let's get it popping. Like,
that was back in the hit 'em up days.
That was back in the crazy days. So one day we was in a studio, bro, and somebody's like, yeah, Stevie J is Puff Daddy producer. And he's in the other studio. So I walked in there. True story. I walked in there. And you probably can Google this. It became the LA Times, this incident. So I'm going to tell you. Hold on. So I walked in the studio, and I was like, what's up, homie? You from the Bad Boy? He's like, yeah, I'm just a producer. I said, I ain't asked you all that. I said, I ain't asked you. Are you Bad Boy? And he had a big bodyguard dude with him. And he was like, man, you got to leave the studio. This dude jumped up. He was like 6-something. Mm-hmm. He's like, you got to walk out the studio. So I'm still like, you know, 5'6", 5'7", whatever my height is. I think I grow an inch every year. Allahu Alam. So I'm like, okay, I got to walk out the studio. Come outside right now. True story. Remind you, this dude like Suge size.
Yeah.
So I took off my shirt, once again intoxicated, not even realizing. But I was looking to get put out of my misery. You know, I was just looking for, let's get it popping.
Yeah.
I took off my shirt. I turned around. He had a gun pointed to me. So I remember I froze. My cousin and them was here. Edie was there. And Quim was there. Yeah. Shout out to them. My cousin Reeve, Quim, mm-hmm. Edie. I froze. And then something said to me, but if I act scared, he's going to shoot me. So I started saying, man, you a punk. You ain't going to do. Yeah. Well, I swear by God.
Like, pull the trigger. Like, dare you.
Like, you ain't going to do nothing. You a coward.
I double dare you.
Now I'm trying to use reverse psychology to get out of it. But really, I was almost about to get my head blown off. Mm-hmm. So I'm telling this dude, man, you a coward. You ain't going to do nothing. Put that gun down and let's fight like a man. Even though he was 6 feet something, most likely, I don't know how I would have whooped him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Most likely this dude probably, you know what I mean?
He probably looked like Shaquille O'Neal next to Kevin Hart.
Real talk. That's what it looked like. So he holding a gun, and I'm talking because I know I remember Edie had the gun on.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting like what's up? I don't hear no click clacking or nothing.
Yeah.
So I remember my cousin Sharif, he was like, he grabbed it from Edie, and when he clicked the gun, the dude ran back in the studio. When he ran back in the studio, he thought we was coming after him. He grabbed one of the engineers and put the gun to the head, to his head. And we left because we saw this Joker crazy. Now this dude got locked up for kidnapping charges, hostages, and we got the hell out of there. The next couple days, the next day was in the newspaper. So when I sat down, this was the beginning of me changing. Because I sat down after the next day and I was like, you know what? Am I really ready to die?
Yeah.
And then I wasn't Muslim at this time, but I started to ask myself, am I really ready to die? Am I really in a position where I want to not live anymore? You know what I mean? Because this guy could have pulled the trigger. It would have been over for me. And am I ready to die living the life that I was living? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like just a while. And that was the beginning of me saying, I have to change. But I just didn't know how, you know what I mean? It's crazy stories like that, bro.
Yeah. But dude, that's the difference between the life that we lived back in the days.
Yes.
To what's going on now, you know? I mean, it was rough back in the days.
It was 90s, it was crazy, yeah. Bro.
And we were like in the last episode, we talked about our parents whooping us, you know?
Exactly.
It was rough.
I'm glad that rough. I got the whoopings though, man. No, yeah. You know what I mean? You know, that we needed that.
Yeah, but back to what you asked me about, it was, am I racist? Be honest. Yeah, I'm not racist. I'm prejudiced.
You're prejudiced.
I was.
You was.
You know, there are some folks of all races that I'm not cool with.
For sure.
But
for sure.
I don't hate the whole race.
I'm like you know? I'm equally. I hate everybody equally.
Yeah, I'm an equal opportunity hate. Yeah. You know,
I might not like. It doesn't matter. I don't like. We. I hate everybody equally.
Yeah, yeah man. So. From what you just told me, with all that, what made you leave the industry?
You know, after becoming Muslim, you know what I mean? After becoming Muslim, and even before I became Muslim, even if I put the Islamic standpoint of music aside, my stance on that is clear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I was so unhappy in the music industry for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
After losing Pac, after losing Gaddafi, after being, you know, I was on over and maybe Siki. 50, oh, after yeah. losing Siki, my brother, 50 million record sales worldwide, just being taken advantage, not getting our due rights. It got to the point where I started questioning the way I was living my life.
Mm-hmm.
After that incident with the gun was in my face. It's not the first time, you know what I mean? It's other incidents where things really led up to it. I could have lost my life, or someone else could have lost their life. And then it got to the point where I started feeling like everything around me in the music industry was breeding negativity.
Yeah.
So I start feeling it's not really for me anymore. Even though I like rapping, I like poetry, even now I write poetry, but I got to a point where I said, man, I need to change my life or I'm going to be finished. And that's what led me to Islam. You know what I mean? Then after becoming Muslim, I left the music industry. And everybody thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
Because I was getting people like, man, we'll give you this amount of money if you do this, be the CEO of my record company. I was just convinced, like, I'm through with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, I mean, what kind of trials and tribulations did you go through?
After I left the music?
Yeah.
You know, after I left
like
the music.
Like coming here.
Coming here and stuff like that.
I think that was an incident in Dubai, right?
Bruh, incident. Let me tell you. So, after I left the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
Became Muslim and started really practicing my religion. Most people don't know that I walked away from my royalties.
Yeah,
because we get paid as a rapper every 6 months.
And you still should be probably beginning it.
Yes. So I said, now that in my opinion, music is not permissible for me to do or for a Muslim, then it's not even allowed for me to eat from that money or feed my family from that money. So I walked away from it. I called one of the homies, Ramsey. Shout out to Ramsey, Jordanian American homie. Good dude. You know what I mean? And he decided to pay, you know, I sold my royalties to him. I said, look here, man, because I was hurting.
Yeah.
No more shows, no more music. I was hurting. I had nothing.
Yeah.
So I think he gave me about $60,000-$70,000 up front. Like I pay $70,000. And then after that, I took some of that money. I invested it with a few different people. The crazy part, everybody I invested with, they lied to me. It was scammed.
Over, yeah.
This business fell. This business didn't work. So I look at it like God wanted me to just be free from that money.
Yeah.
Then I went through some difficulties, trials, bro.
Yeah.
Imagine my son Muhammad at this particular time, he was 6 months old.
Yeah.
So I decided to leave America. Before he had cancer. Yes, pre-cancer. So I said, you know what? I'm going to leave America. I'm going to go to Saudi Arabia. One Saudi dude was like, come here. We got something for you. You know, this job when you get here. This before I moved to Saudi Arabia this time, you know? So I said, no problem, cool. I'm going to go to Saudi Arabia. But before I go, you send me the visa. Send me the visa to Emirates. My wife family is from Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
So I had my last $10,000 to my name. I'm thinking that I'm moving from the Western America for good. I ain't no telling when I'm going
to
come
and
back.
And you get to start all over.
Start over. So my $10,000, I stopped in Toronto so my wife can say bye to her father who lives in Canada. And then I went to the Emirates. My wife's sisters, they're Emiratis. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Emirates and I said, you know what? I'm going to stay here before I get my visa to come to Saudi Arabia. This is 15 years ago, mind you. So I'm waiting. The guy who promised me the visa, he pretty much wasn't being truthful.
And on top of that, you shipped everything to...
I shipped everything, bro. Hobart, imagine to Khobar, the mom back there. Imagine my last...
All the Tupac stuff that
I had. Stuff from Pac. I have stuff that I grew up with all my life. We shipped everything.
Everything.
Then it got to the point where that $10,000 is nothing. It went away like this.
Of course.
So I'm broke. Now I'm like, what am I going to do? Check this out. So eventually it's time for me to leave the UAE. Because we cannot continue to renew the visa.
Yeah.
My wife family, especially her sister Samira, was like, you know, you can stay with us and live with us forever. You never have to leave. But as a man, you don't feel like a man when you're stuck at your wife's sister family house and you're not making no money, you can't take. Yeah. So I said, you know what? I got to go back. Mm-hmm. I made Toba from the music industry. I'm never going back to doing music, but I got to go back to America. I have no money to even book an airline ticket. So I'm calling people, even some families. Nobody's like, nope, we can't help you. I'm like, let me just borrow a couple $1,000 to like get back to America. Nope,
for you, your family, right?
For me and my family.
You, your wife, so and Muhammad, right?
This is why I got a lot of love for Mike Epps.
Shout out to Mike Epps,
man. He said he's going to come on the show, too. He said he's going to come on the podcast. So I called Mike Epps, and I'm like, bro, I need a favor. I said, I just need to borrow a couple $1,000 to purchase airline tickets for my wife, myself. My son, Muhammad, is only 6 months old. He doesn't need an airline ticket. Mm-hmm. Mike Epps, like, let me call you back. He called me back. He was like, look, I book a ticket for you, your wife, and your son so you don't have to carry him on this long flight and you don't have to pay me back a penny.
Respect.
This Mike S, a real dude. So when I went back to America, remind you, I'm broke, Aki. I'm broke, bro. I have nothing. And people laughing at me like, he left the music industry. Now look at him. Before I left America, I'm in a brand new Cadillac trucks, Lexus. The people see me rolling up in the mad shit like this.
Yeah.
Now when I come back, I have not even a car to get to the mosque. Mm-hmm. I'm sleeping on my brother Camille floor. Very difficult. And then I'm sleeping on my brother Mooney floor. Mm-hmm. And at this particular time, my brother Mooney wasn't Muslim. So he'll call me and be like, we have a job for your wife, but she got to remove her hijab. And I'd be like, she ain't removing nothing.
But the Mercedes-Benz.
The Mercedes-Benz offered a job. And my brother back there was like, man, Islam made my brother crazy or stupid. But I always knew to myself that I believe in my religion. God promised me that if I be patient, he's going to open up the doors for me. I'm going to be patient. So right before I left the UAE, I gave one of the homies a couple $100s, and we purchased, you know, the little oils, the perfume bottles.
Yeah.
I just started slanging these joints. I started slanging one bottle, $20, $50. I got to hustle. I don't even have a place to live.
But to be honest,
this is some of the best days of my life, and I will tell you why. Because when I made my first $100 from selling oil, remind you, man, I used to get checks $150,000 this 6 months, $70,000, $80,000. One time, we had Outlaw Records.
Yeah.
Outlaw Records, man, we was independent. We was getting $10 a CD.
Yeah.
And our first record that we released on our own sold 200,000 copies. $10 a CD came to us and the Outlaw. So we was living good. And now I'm having, and even from the royalties that I was getting from the Tupac Outlaw CDs, $100,000, $60,000, $80,000. This me just sitting back and this money coming. Now I have nothing. So my first $100. Remind you, bro, I remember I used to get checks for $500. And I used to say, man, I'm not walking to no bank. Because back then you had to wait in line. I said, I'm not walking to a bank to
just for $500.
Get this out of my face. It's not real money.
Throw it away.
Now I'm struggling. I'm thinking about all of these stupid mistakes that I made. Like, man, where's them $500 checks at? And so my first $100, I was happy. Like I felt, you know what I mean? I felt like, wow, I finally made $100, $200.
Every dollar,
I was grateful. I felt it. And then I went and got a rental car. Bro, remind you, I used to be in nothing but brand new cars. I used to say to myself, I'm never riding a used car.
Oh, yeah.
But when I was, you know, when I was making this money and hustling and starting from the bottom back up, I was grateful for everything. I remember when I got my first rental car. I made enough money to rent a car for like a week.
It was probably a Hyundai.
Bro, that joint probably was a
Kia?
Back in the day, Kia. It was bad, bro. But I was humble, so I was happy.
Yeah.
And I didn't care what people think about me at that time. I had to go through that stage because I came from a time where I was only worrying about how people look at me. So this particular time in my life was me. I feel like I was finally obtaining and tasting freedom, because now I don't care what the people think. I need to drive this car because my kid, my wife, my kid, they need help. I need to get food. It got to the point, brother, I used to go into my brother's couch and collect quarters just to get diapers for my son.
Yeah,
I went through that struggle. Most people don't know that. So when they see me having coffee shops or part of this restaurant or this cafe, they don't know the struggle that I went through to get back to finally getting back on my seat, on my feet. Shout out to my homie Doc. They call him the celebrity barber. He called me one day. He was like, Moo.
From Platinum Cups.
He hit me up. He's like, Moo, there's a football player from the NFL. I forget his name. He's starting a record company. He want to give you $150,000 salary to be the CEO. I was like, nope. Even though I had no money in my pocket.
Yeah.
I was like, man, if this is what I feel my religion telling me to stand on, I'm standing on. So people thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
But I felt that I'm not a slave to the music industry anymore.
Yeah.
I don't care what the people think about what I'm wearing anymore. I needed to go through that. Yeah. So eventually, step by step, I was able to get on my feet. And one of the things that I learned from this is that, one, always keep trusting God. You know what I mean? God will always come through. But two, it let me know that I can do it without trying to follow the crowd, without feeling like there's only one way that I can make money. The only thing that I can do for my life is the music industry, for example. Mm-hmm. No, it let me know that if I put my trust in God and I be truthful in what I believe in, doors will open up for me, you know? So eventually came back to Saudi Arabia. And one of the things I got to shout out my wife for, because I remember at this particular time, bro, I'm sleeping on the floor, literally, like with my wife and my son, Muhammad. And one particular time when I was at my brother Camille's house, my wife used to have to fall asleep with the hijab because we were sleeping in his living room. So every because she had to sleep on the hijab in her baya, like so uncomfortable. Never complained one time. You know what I mean? Not one time complained. So when we go visit her family, they don't know we homeless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They don't know I'm staying with my brothers. To them, they made it seem like I'm still taking care of my family and taking care of my business. You know what I mean? So all of these things you remember because you start to see who's really in your corner. You know what I mean? Never complained one time saying, I need this, I need that. Because when I first married my wife, I was making good money. And then when I hit rock bottom.
She still stuck around.
She stuck around. She didn't sign up for it, but she didn't complain one time.
That's straight, you know, ride or die.
For sure, bro. So
dang.
Now that's, everything I do now is for my family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why everything I do now is for my wife and kids.
Shout out to Mike Epps.
Mike Epps, a real one.
You 100.
Honey.
You are top flight of the world, Craig. Not just the city, the world. He one of my favorite, too.
Yeah, Mike Epps, a homie, a real one.
We got to get him on the show. Yeah,
he said he's going to get on the show. Yeah, he said, I want to get on the podcast show. So he's going to be one of our guests in the near future, inshallah.
But, you know, I know you don't listen to music and all that, but
yes,
I do.
I don't.
And I'm allowed to, so I'm going to talk about it. But, like,
yes,
all the influences, like, yeah, we have some crappy rappers lately, you know?
Yes.
But we still have, like, those diamonds in the rough that's still keeping it real and still pays homage to the ones who brought them to the game.
Yes.
That influenced them, like J. Cole, you got Drake.
Yes.
Eminem, which is one of my favorite. You see?
Yes.
Remember I told you I had a problem with white people?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I'm not racist. I'm prejudiced. There's some white people I had problems with. So I had a lot of good white friends too.
Yeah, yeah.
And
definitely.
Eminem, one of my favorite rappers, aside from Tupac and Biggie and all them.
Yes.
Because he pays homage. You know, like
he always
shouts out Dr. Dre who saved him from the trials and tribulations. He was going downhill, he was going to.
Yeah.
Joyner Lucas, he's coming up. He's a big
I never heard of these people,
MC.
You know what I mean?
Joyner?
Yes.
Is the controversial rapper, like Eminem was. But what I mean, you gotta read the lyrics to Read the lyrics to I'm Not Racist by Joyner Lucas.
Okay.
It's touching.
If they have a message, man, it's important to have that message. Because we tried that ourselves. We always tried our best to put a message out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And rap music, I mean, it's poetry.
It's poetry.
It's poetry about with instruments, you know?
Every once in a while, I write. Yeah. People don't know, man.
And you might not listen to the rap song.
Because, in the future, we're going to spit something on the show.
You might not listen to rap songs, but you read the lyrics because it's still poetry.
Real talk. Some of them, like,
I ain't going to lie, I cry. I actually literally started busting out crying because I remember when I was growing up, the trials and tribulations, even regardless if I'm black or not.
Yes.
You know, even though a lot of the rap songs are geared towards the black community.
Yes.
I still felt for that.
For sure.
I might have been black, but
I
still got persecuted by the white people too, you know,
when I was growing up. For sure.
So yeah, it touched me.
And it's good and bad in everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, in every group of people.
Yeah.
And it's good and bad in everybody, if you want to say that. Everybody knows it's perfect. Don't get me wrong. You know, we all have our shortcomings, but it's good and bad in every group of people, whether it's white, black, you know what I mean? Like, you know, the other day when I posted something and the guy was like, but you only posting, you live in Saudi Arabia, you only posting that. If Pac was alive, man, he would only post stuff about his black people and this and this and that. Why you don't show us, which is psychotic. I said, look, bro, I don't deal with that type of stuff. Like, I don't, I don't post according to what you think I should post. You understand? Mm-hmm. Black people killed my mother and father. So I can't sit here and say, I'm just going to only, you know what I mean? There's good and bad and everything. I'm not blind following nobody, no rules. I don't blind follow no rules other than the religion of Islam that our prophet told us. And one thing about the religion of Islam, we don't judge anyone based on their race. We don't say, okay, just because he's black, he get a free pass and I have to accept everything he say. No, there's good and there's things that black people, we as black people need to be held accountable for. White people need to held accountable for. You know what I mean? We not in no position where we running around from the top systematically oppressing people, but sometimes we oppress ourselves, you know what I mean, in our community. So I look at it like, man, there's good and bad in every group of people. And I don't come close to anybody based on race. This is the beauty of the religion of Islam, because it teaches to be balanced. You don't say, man, you, of course we want good for our people. As a African American, naturally I would want good for my people first. You know what I mean? I would want to see our neighborhoods become better. I would want to see our people become successful. This is natural that I'm sure everybody feel this way for their people. You know what I mean? So that's it is what it is.
You know what shout I mean? Out to Joyner Lucas. We're gonna get him on the show.
I'll reach out to him.
We're gonna talk about what he believes in too, because he's all about bettering communities. Music, it sounds like he's trying to better the world.
Okay, let's interview him. Make it happen.
I'll reach out to him.
Let's make it happen.
Damn, I should have brought my gum. Yeah, so we got to wrap it up. But before we do, we're going to do some shout outs.
For sure. We had a few questions also, right?
Yeah, which I think we answered it in the show. It.
Dope, dope. Shout him out. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So AQ from YouTube, you know, he's like, hey, oh, he wanted to know how you got started.
With what?
MW Cafe and all that.
MW Cafe. You
entrepreneur.
To make a, you know, I always try to be a hustler. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As an entrepreneur from my block. A lot, you know, most people may not know. When I was, before we started releasing albums after Pac died, one of the first, I can say, businesses that I started on my own, I used to own vending machines, bro. Around Los Angeles. So I used to buy, like, I think I owned like four or five. Put them in a few apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. I remember one doctor office, let me put him in his office, and but it failed. You know, so, but that's part of entrepreneurship. If you don't have no failure in life, how are you gonna really obtain success? You gotta go through these failures so you appreciate when you succeed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you become successful overnight, most likely you can lose it overnight, and you might not really feel like you gotta work hard anymore. So when I went through these stages, that was my first, you know, business, and then I got into coffee. My grandfather, shout out to my grandfather, my Cuban grandfather, Harry. You know, he was the first person that gave me coffee. My grandfather, my mother's father from Cuba. So when I was a kid, I tried coffee. And when I left drinking the bad brown drink and became a Muslim, I started drinking coffee. And then I started realizing that every time I turned a corner, I saw somebody with a Starbucks cup in their hand. And I started researching coffee. And I knew I wanted to get in the industry, business. So it took some time. And eventually, we opened MW Cafe. And Ras Al Khaimah, UAE. Shout out to my partner, Anthony, from Holland. He was the first one to open it up with me. Then me and my partner, Mansour, we did it here in Riyadh. So shout out to Mansour.
Yeah,
so
shout out.
Nothing happened overnight.
AQ, I hope that answers your question. I want to give a big shout out to Joshua Jackson. Not the actor from back in the days, but he's on YouTube. I've noticed, because, you know, I read all the comments. On YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. I read all of that. So he's been following us since the old episodes we were doing back in, you know, like before we did Mike's pod.
So he lured you with it.
And he's been commenting every single, whether it's a clip or an episode, he always comments.
So shout out to, what's his name?
So we want to give him big ups. Big ups to Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson.
Big ups, Joshua Jackson.
Shout out, bro.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's, dang, when they get empty?
They left. We the only ones in the building.
We still talking. That's what, dang. Yeah, if you guys don't know, this is actually an open space right here, and there's people that work there, you know, the team. They do the graphics design. It's empty right now.
They left, man. They went home.
Oh, dang. Our editor's in there going, yeah, when am I going to be able to go next. Home?
He want to leave next.
All right, guys. Thank you for joining in. And for shout out to our sponsor, our fashion partners, 1886. We have that giveaway going on. So if you want to find the details, you got to go to episode one and check it out. And I'll give you the more details on that. And then soon we're going to be announcing when it starts. So you
got follow us.
Yeah, follow us.
Twitter.
If you have any
YouTube
questions you want to ask us, go to our Twitter page and ask on our Twitter.
What's the Twitter page again?
Podcast Mutu-Q.
Dope.
Okay, Twitter, Podcast Mutu-Q. Give us the questions you want us to answer on the show and we'll do it. If we didn't get to all the questions, you know, my bad, you know.
Yeah, next
we
time.
We got caught up in the moment. We started talking, you know. Yeah. But that's what we're here for, to chop it up. So
chopping it up, bro.
Till next time, deuces, we out. Throw up the west side. Yeah, west side. All right. All right, all right. Yeah.
That's another dope one, bro, in the bucket. Another dope one.